I've often found that one thing that can really help get you in football shape is large sums of money.
That'll do it.
One young person just got that in Major League Baseball, but it also went to the other coast in the NFL. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. By the way, you heard DMX there. I think the most relatable thing in the world I saw last night was a 40-plus-year-old DMX on a versus battle against Snoop Dogg on Instagram. They're
right,
playing their
right.
songs. They're rapping along. DMX looks like he has gained a solid other person's worth of pounds.
Dad bod?
And was gassed
really?
At the beginning of this. I've never felt closer to DMX than seeing him clearly winded before it was appropriate to be in competition. I felt very seen.
Anybody call him on it?
The comment section's kind of made note on it, and everyone on Twitter was tweeting about it, but I was worried, honestly, that he was going to throw up, because, you know, DMX's songs, tons of energy,
oh, yeah.
lots of barking and all that.
So, tough call there, huh? Was it tough to watch? Tough to
You know what? It got,
go, ooh.
It got better as it went along. Stumbled out of the
okay.
gate. Maybe a lot like what we could expect. Maybe DMX last night in a rap battle against Snoop Dogg was exactly what we can expect from this NFL season. Coming out of the gate, everyone might look a little bit out of shape and not quite themselves, but as you round into form at the end,
find
you remember
footing.
Why these people were great all along.
Find their footing, and we're going to talk about the money of that. Guy in baseball getting paid, guy in football getting paid. We all do this as I am about to have to pay a lot of money. You mentioned it before. Again, my daughter Sydney got engaged to one Ben Broniker, and we did a special Sorry in Advance podcast all about the proposal and the different proposals in this family and the one maybe upcoming for Mike at some point, which your mother's now completely focused on.
You guys got to stop making this about me. This is about my sister and all
yep.
this. And this is about the fact that if you didn't promote that podcast, finally, my mom was going
to exactly
stab
right.
You.
So
yeah.
you can get the Sorry in Advance, a Golic Family podcast, wherever you can get your podcast, right? So you know all
exactly.
that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Please do that for my father's sake.
Yep.
For my family's sake, go ahead and try yourself a quality product from us.
You need to ask Mookie Betts and or now Chase Young for some sort of loan to help pay for this wedding.
Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And yes, that is the announcement this morning. So we have Mookie Betts with a 12-year extension on a year contract that he had already that's going to be worth well over $300 million in this one. But in the NFL, Chase Young. And the NFL Network has reported that Chase Young has announced on Twitter that he has signed his rookie contract with the Washington football team. As the NFL Network reported, the deal is worth $300. I'm just in that mode of dealing out
wow.
hundreds of millions of
he
dollars.
He hopes maybe his next contract will be that.
Yeah, the deal is worth $34.56 million with a $22.697 million signing bonus. Per source informed of the situation, he's going to receive 100% of his signing bonus up front.
Wow. And listen, so and the contracts in the NFL for the rookies are pretty easy right now. He's a second overall pick. There's a rookie scale. You basically get slotted. It'll go up a little bit each year. But that's why you don't see the holdouts in the NFL like you used to see before they put this rookie wage scale. The last big deal, I believe, before that went into play was Sam Bradford, where he was guaranteed as a number one pick $50 million. It's all been down lower than that now, creeping up a little each year. So this is the number two pick in what he gets in a nice little, 22 plus mil right when he signs his name again. It's still pretty nice. We know Mookie Betts gets 65 mil, I think, when he signs his name, but getting 22 mil signing bonus is pretty nice.
Exactly, for a guy that is expected to be the sort of Nick Bosa piece of Washington's defensive line that's chock full of first rounders.
Exactly right. That D-line, I'm really interested to see where it goes. Jack Del Rio has some fun toys to play with there, the new D coordinator under Ron Rivera in Washington.
And he deserves it with all the other stuff that's been put on his plate.
You're not kidding. Rivera, a defensive guy overall, obviously a linebacker in the NFL for years. Now the head coach there in Washington, and Del Rio, the defensive coordinator. In this D-line, it is. You kind of look at it like San Francisco in just not only the great the top players up front, but the depth you had to roll in as well on what they can do and expect that. We always talk about defense being ahead of offense early on, and I would think that would even be more with no preseason game. Plus, you can roll in more people. O-line has five guys that play and five guys that just play usually. You're not rotating in the O-line. D-line, you can do it to keep fresh. So, boy, that, I'm really looking forward to seeing what that D-line does.
Yeah, and we've seen over the last week you're starting to see a lot of those rookie deals get signed for the first and second rounders, a lot of the top picks finding their way home in all this. As we know, rookies for some teams of the Texans and the Chiefs had reported already, and others were going to start to roll in early soon. on that one. So good to see up on that front with him. I saw this was interesting news around the world of football in general, though, because we've talked so much about places that are cautious to open. The Jets and Giants have put out a joint statement saying that in the state of New Jersey, they wouldn't be allowed to have fans in the stands for those games. Mark Davis, the owner for the Raiders, had talked about that in Las Vegas as well. As we look for trends and places and how they're going to handle certain things, one area looks to be set to make an announcement about high school football today. Cole Kublik, our fine football analyst, works does great stuff at the SEC Network for us, tweeted this last night, the Alabama High School Athletic Association is set to announce last night, tomorrow, so it would be today, fall sports are a go without delays. Practice can begin on Monday. All students able to participate. Band and cheer are deemed essential and can attend home and away games with no fan limitation. In all that one right now, which is interesting. Local systems will be able to alter this potentially and all of that. But we know that's an effect in all of this as we look certainly at the college level. And we know Alabama and its importance to the football landscape there. What could potentially be precedent being set in other parts of the state already?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've seen other states, the bigger states, California, there is no high school football going to be going on this fall. Nothing going on this fall in sports in California. We know in Texas, they've delayed the bigger, I think, 5 and 6 class a little bit. The other class, I think, are starting at the normal time. So those are two of the biggest, especially recruiting states, but high school football places in the country, one not having any of it and the other still going to have it. And then we trickle down. You just did Alabama. I know here in Connecticut, certainly not known as a great football state, but they last week started their practices for football. So I think you're going to see in most places, you're going to see some high school football, which really kind of made, I think, some eyebrows go up that say California is not going to do it, and you're really going to have to start wondering about college football for California teams as well, given the state they're in. They're about to pass, I think, New York in COVID deaths, I believe, if I was reading correctly there. So it's been tough there, and they're closing things down again on what sports may actually happen out there.
Well, and I guess that's the thing, is you're looking at each situation relative to its backdrop. If Connecticut saying it's starting sports up again, Connecticut has been one of the very few states that has things trending in the right direction. It's been one of the few times we've been proud residents.
We have,
in this state.
And I quickly want to say it's either deaths or COVID cases in California. I one of the two they were passing New York.
California has been a hotbed of this really since the beginning in a lot of this, and it's been a state that's been at the center of a lot of this now. So I believe if this was highly questionable at this point, the banana phone would ring, Poppy would pick it up, and it would be the Blue Jays on the phone wondering if Alabama had any spots for them
to potentially
come and play down there. But that's one of, I mean, we talk about the movers and shakers and all of this. Alabama, the SEC, all of the surrounding decisions made in that area that are going to have probably a massive effect on what happens in the world of college football. I get this is high school. Not going to react too much to it, but this is one of the few places that we've seen saying come out very publicly, we're going full steam ahead, no fan restrictions.
Yeah, and you wonder, all these states that are having high school football, let's just take it all the way down. They're probably going to have Little League football as well. I would imagine if you're doing high school, it would go down. You know, there's a lot of decisions to be made, some obviously in the bigger scope, like schools opening, whether they're going to open, and I mean like grade schools and high schools around the country, not so much colleges, so, and then sports to go along with it. But you're right, Alabama basically said, we're open for business. And that's the biggest difference. Fans and everything, you know, and I didn't read in there, like the NFL has said, if you're going to have fans, you have to wear a mask. I didn't see that, and I don't know if that's been stated in Alabama. If there are fans at these games, do they have to wear any kind of face covering at all? I don't know, and I didn't see that in there.
I have not either, but that is worth noting that Brian McCarthy came out yesterday for the NFL and said any fans that over the course of this season at all, because we know that situation is going to be fluid, and I'm sure even in places like New Jersey where right now it's no fans for this, if it at all becomes a possibility, I'm sure they'll explore it. And if they do, you're going to have to wear a mask.
They are. I would say it's going to be like what NASCAR is doing and what like the PGA is doing, right? NASCAR didn't have fans for the first few races, and they slowly have built up to their all-star race on July 15th. They had between 20 and 30,000 fans there. The PGA was going to start having fans. They pushed it a little bit, but soon they're going to start having fans. So you could probably see. Now, again, it isn't until another, you know, till September 10th or whatever it is that the NFL season starts. We'll see where we are then, but you think maybe it'll start without fans and then lead to having fans. And again, if you do, you have to come in with that face mask.
Yeah, and I think it's just, again, in the interest of doing as much as you can early on in this process right now. And for the NFL, they're going to have so many variables they need to worry about. The thing is, it's going to be enforcement, though. And we've talked about this in a number of different regards. The NFL, and this is not to compare the two activities at all, but we remember when NASCAR banned the Confederate flag.
Right.
And we said, because these racetracks tend to host fewer races overall,
right,
there's a lot more resources that you can devote for your one Cup Series race at that level to finding, scouring the track for and weeding out any of those Confederate flags to enforce that policy. With the NFL, while the game day resources are certainly plentiful, you're playing a lot more games. In theory, you're a team and you're hosting X amount of home games every year. And so it's not putting it all into one when it comes
right,
to that.
Right.
And so that's going to be the difficult part in this, especially depending on how many fans you're allowed to have in the stadium, is how you go about actually enforcing that policy and giving any teams.
Yeah, and again, most teams will have that plan. We know the Dolphins came out with basically the first one when they talked about having a plan to get 20 to 25,000 fans in a stadium. Unless we keep going backwards in some areas as far as the positive test, we're going to eventually start to get fans in the stadium, and it will be interesting to hear all the procedures and the safety precautions that will be taking place for that, and will fans be comfortable? I know there'll be some fans that will jump right, like anything else. Some fans will jump right back into it and say, I'm going. Some fans are going to say, it's not worth it to me, and then there's going to be kind of those fence sitters that may say, well, I'm going to see how it goes for the first game or so, and if it seems like it all went well, then I'll jump in and go.
Yep, and the NFL, I think, is probably thankfully for them, because they've got a whole bunch of problems and things they've got to deal with on the side of actual gameplay and getting their product up to speed. It seems like, based on what's going on in a lot of these states, they'll have time going into the season to figure out any protocols should that become a reality. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer is changing the way you buy home insurance. Now you can go online, get a custom quote, and save both time and money. Learn more at progressive.com. So we've got the NFL still working its way back, but baseball is full on tonight. Full stop, opening night tonight. Nats, Yankees, Cole, Scherzer, it's all happening with us now. And we are excited to be joined now by Matt Piskurgin of our ESPN Sunday Night Baseball crew. Matt, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Well, I'm relieved. I'm excited. I'm more relieved than excited, because there was a moment there where we were all a little worried if there'd be baseball this year. So, yeah, equal parts relieved and excited. That's a better way to put it.
So what's going to, as we know, as we'll get into the players and the process they go through, how about you? How about for people calling the games, what's going to be different for you?
Well, I will be driving to Bristol here shortly. And instead of being on an airplane and going to the ballpark last night, we'll be calling the game from the studio in Bristol. So, it is what it is, right? I mean, we're not going to be able to have that feel. We're not going to be able to see necessarily some of the nuances, but they've done everything they can, our Sunday Night Baseball crew, to make sure we will have enough. And this is how everybody's operating now. It's not just Sunday Night Baseball. It's not just us tonight. Every regional broadcast, every other national broadcast is either doing it from a home studio or an actual studio, as we are, and we're fortunate that we have the resources up there that we do. So, it's a new thing. I mean, I've called games off monitors before for the Olympics. And when I worked for the Padres, they played an exhibition series in Beijing, China against the Dodgers about 10, 12 years ago, actually longer than that now. It's weird. But once you get going, it's baseball and it's conversation. And hopefully it sounds normal to the viewers.
And I think having it back, you're right, it's going to feel normal there. But we know the lead-up, usually, especially going through spring training, you're able to get out to the parks, you're able to get around guys and see them in person. So what have you been able to gather, especially looking at the Yankees, the defending champions, and the Washington Nationals, as far as what they've looked like through the course of this preseason and what you expect from them coming out the gate in game one of a very short season?
I expect the Yankees to be good from the jump. The Nationals are good as well, because they're starting, they're returning their starting pitching. But one of the things I discovered, and we're all kind of reduced, if you want to call it that, to phone calls and chats with people, because you don't have that face-to-face time at the ballparks. So I did spend a lot of time this week on the phone with coaches, And one of the things I discovered that the Nationals have had to deal with, unfairly so, in one sense, is that the quarantine restrictions in D.C., in their home territory, are a lot more rigid than they are in some of the other 30 major league cities, with the exception of Toronto, who are about as stiff as they could have been on the Blue Jays, punting them out of the country and making them play a 60-game road trip, still to be determined. But the Nationals had guys quarantined because of D.C. Guidelines that other teams didn't have to deal with. In other words, here's the example. Juan Soto and Victor Robles, two of their most important players, fly in from the Dominican for spring training 2.0, or summer camp, as we called it. There was a thought that they were exposed to somebody that might have had the virus, might have had. There were no positive tests along the way. They had to quarantine for 16 days. They missed 2.5 weeks of summer camp 2.0. The Nationals, to their credit, did everything they could to get them up to speed. They put exercise bikes in their apartments. They brought a batting net and a tee over to Juan Soto's place. I'm not sure if he took, you know, swings in the apartment or not. That would have been interesting for the neighbors. But other teams didn't have to deal with that. So, you know, you couldn't avoid some of the uneven playing field things that happened, but everybody did the best they could.
Well, that's the one thing about pro sports. Usually those guys get treated a certain way, and now they had to learn to adapt along the way. And along those lines, as we're talking to Matt Vasgersian, calling the game tonight, Yankees and Washington Nationals, he'll be doing it from the Bristol ESPN studios, is when the KBO started and we started televising it, we found out what players had to do on game day, what the protocols were. So, and again, your ability to talk to players and or coaches, what is kind of the game day situation for players just getting to the stadium to play in these games?
Yeah, that's an interesting discussion, Mike, because it's a wholly different experience for them, for sure. You know, the personnel at the ballpark have been classified into three tiers. Tier one is players and coaches, people in uniform. Tier two are immediate support people, training staff, the kids that work in the clubhouse. Tier three are other, I guess you call them vital, because the only people allowed in the ballpark are vital, team employees, such as front office, administrative people that have to have access to the ballpark. Each of those tiers has a different egress and ingress from the ballpark. So tier one people will park in a certain area. They will have a certain route into the clubhouse that nobody else is allowed to take. The clubhouses have been spread out. So you've got the entire ballpark to use because nobody else is there. So a lot of guys are in the actual clubhouse. In the case of the Red Sox, they've repurposed the luxury suites for the season ticket holders. So they've paired up, guys have locker mates, and they have a suite up in the top ring at Fenway, as opposed to being in the tiny old clubhouse that they've used, you know, since 1908. Every team is different, but what's gone is that social component. And baseball is such a culture sport, so there's no hang time anymore. Guys don't show up early to have their breakfast and read the newspaper or play video games like they would have in a normal season. It's get there. A lot of guys will get to the ballpark semi-dressed and get out to the field and minimize that time inside with each other. It's not as much fun for them, I don't think. But again, this is what everybody has to do.
And I think you've heard a lot of businesses talk about that, losing out on that office time, that chance to interact and understand their hell is playing offensive line. That was a position where you spent as much time as you could with the four other guys that were a part of that group for you and learn all of those small things. So obviously, Matt, that's going to be a downside to all of this, but looking for the silver lining in every situation, the way that we try to do as we go into a season that is going to be shorter and that's going to ask different things of these teams, do you think there's anything we might get out of it that actually benefits baseball that they can look at and see might be something that'll make the game better ultimately?
Yeah, you know, Mike, I might be on an island on this one, but I love every one of the rule changes that they've put in place with the eye on kind of expediting a conclusion of games. And not everybody feels like this, but I feel strongly in favor of the universal DH and specifically the extra innings rule. Again, a lot of people don't like it. I understand. But anybody that doesn't like it really can't say so until next year if they keep it in place. Because this year, we'd all agree, you can't have a 19-inning game. You just can't have one of these interminable games where a bullpen gets destroyed, flights are changed, and in an environment where you've got to get 60 games in 66 days, that in and of itself is great because it's almost like a long college tournament now. Every game has an emphasis on it. Every game is worth 2.7 games in a regular 162-game season. So the premium to win right out of the gate, starting tonight, is never before like we've seen it. But I love the rule changes. I think that extra innings thing, starting a runner at second base, everybody kind of washes over it by saying, well, they're just going to bunt him to third and then sack fly to get the run. Not so fast. I mean, it just doesn't happen that easily anymore. The team that led Major League Baseball with sacrifice hits last year had fewer than 60. It's not something that's in the skill set of a major leaguer anymore. And maybe it returns. I personally like small ball and maybe see a little bit more of that this year.
Matt, I'm with you. We're talking to Matt Vasgersian calling the game tonight, Yankees and Washington Nationals at 7 o'clock on ESPN. I'm with you. I love it. But, man, the baseball people we have talked to,
everyone.
You're right. They hate it. So we'll be right there on that island with you. Last one for me. Are you expecting – is it too commonsensical to say – you're expecting great – now, these are great pitchers tonight. I get it. But overall, great pitching, maybe not as deep into a game as usual at first, but pitching dominating, hitting early on?
Yeah, that may be what we see. A lot of people do expect that, Mike. I think even it had the season started when it was supposed to back in March, I think we were going to see and it's been going this way, a kind of different feeling starting pitching dynamic. There are teams like the Giants, the Brewers, the Rays started this whole thing by just trying to circumnavigate outs. How are we going to get our 27 outs? It might not be starter going 6 1/3 and then 2 setup guys and a closer. They're going to mix and match like crazy. I know that the Giants, that whole bullpen is just versatile guys. There are going to be guys that will be asked to go 2-3 innings in relief. There's going to be a guy that starts and goes an inning, and the next day he might be closing the game. Those traditional roles are being blurred all the time. For better or for worse, I don't know. I mean, this is where I do sound like a traditionalist, and I like going to the ballpark knowing that I've got Randy Johnson on the mound or Tom Seaver on the mound or John Smoltz on the mound. Like that marquee element to baseball, to buying a ticket, is vanishing with the smarter use, and I'll call it smarter because it is for teams that don't have those starting pitchers with that kind of use of bullpens. So for that reason, I think pitching may be a little ahead of hitting early. I hope I'm wrong because I like seeing people run. that's what we that can't run like to see those that can, and I hope we see some of that.
We certainly hope so as well. Looking forward to the call tonight. Matt, we appreciate the time this morning. Best of luck and enjoy it.
Nice being with you guys. You got it. See ya.
Thanks, Matt. He wants to see people run. I want to see people hit dingers.
Yep. We want to see exactly what we've seen in the early going here. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, mashing dingers. So we will check out there. But coming up next, one of the best, brightest, and most explosive players on the hard court returned to the bubble, returned through protocol yesterday. We'll check in on that after. Is that so much to ask? I just want answers. I want to know.
You want me to bring your mother down here?
No, please, God.
All right. I'll do it.
I don't think either of you guys would like the answers I've got on.
All right. Okay.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. here now. But when we do need some answers, we go to someone on the inside. And we are fortunate to be joined now by our very own Lisa Salters, ESPN reporter. Lisa Salters inside of the NBA bubble here. Lisa, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing pretty well, Lisa. It's starting to finally get underway in the NBA bubble. We had the scrimmages, the inter-squad scrimmages, starting up yesterday. So I'm curious, what did it look and feel like as the NBA got into its first foray of teams playing against other opponents?
I got to tell you, it was so great just to see the guys out on the floor again, playing, running up and down, seeing the officials, hearing the buzzer. All of that. But it was a little weird because, as the NBA is still kind of tweaking how they want to do the audio inside the venues. They're not sure what they want to do about crowd noise, and, you know, things like that. And so because this is just a scrimmage, not just a scrimmage, but because this was a scrimmage, what we saw yesterday is not going to be what we see, say, when regular season games resume on the 30th. So it was just quiet. There was really nothing inside the venue last night, just the ref's whistle, the buzzer, the announcer, just you know, saying, you know, foul on, you know, number whatever, and giving the guy's name. So it was kind of eerily quiet. And, you know, as a member of the media, you're sitting there with, like, you know, 10 other people watching the game, and it's just silent. And you're thinking, what if I say, oh, that was a terrible call, ref? You know, that would, you know, it would have echoed throughout the entire arena. So that was just weird how usually you can't, sometimes you can't hear yourself think when you're watching a game at a venue. Now it was just so quiet because they haven't really figured out what they want to do about the fact that there are no fans there.
And also, it's in a different environment, and forgetting the no fans, but, you know, whenever we get to the NCAA tournament and they start to be held in, like, these bigger, you know, roofed stadiums where now there's more crowds there and the depth perception for the players and such. So this is a new area for the players to play on. The court sizes are the same and all that. I get it. But around it is different. Any talk about how that will affect the games or things maybe coaches or players maybe want to see differently?
Well, there's really not much they can do about it. The fact that there is a lot of area, much more room around the court than there usually is because there are no stands for fans. So they've got the seating, a lot of seating, up to 62 seats courtside for players from, you know, opposing, you know, teams who aren't playing, guys who are just kind of hanging out in the bubble who think like, oh, you know, I'm going to go watch this team play. We play them in a couple of days. I'm going to go watch them. So that's kind of neat because that's something that you don't really see in the NBA. Occasionally, you might have an NBA player checking out a game from another NBA game, but usually after that guy has been eliminated from the playoffs or he's watching his brother play on another team. That's something that you see like in the NCAA tournament, right, where entire teams will come sit and watch a game for, you know, that their next opponent is playing. So now here in the bubble, because, I mean, there isn't a whole lot for guys to do here. If guys want to come watch a game, there are 62 up to 62 seats that they can just come watch a game. And I think that's kind of neat as well. There's extra room for cameras. I know our guys are always fighting for spots on the floor for the cameras to get in. And now there's plenty of room around the court for all these extra cameras. So I think that's going to be kind of cool as well. All these extra angles.
Well, I can say, I think it is. It's equal parts entertainment and scouting and all this. When I saw Boban working at the Pac-Man machine last night, looking a little bit oversized. So I feel like this space might be more to his liking in a lot of this, as Lisa Salters is with us from inside the NBA bubble. And speaking of the players, we got a great star back. Russell Westbrook has cleared the protocol there. He got back through and got back on the court. So what was the feedback like around him in his first practice coming off of his bout with COVID-19?
Well, you know, just I was not at that press conference, or did not watch that Zoom conference. I went to the scrimmage yesterday. From what I was reading from Mike D'Antoni's remarks is that, you know, they've got to ease him in a little bit. I mean, you're just getting here to Orlando. He had to deal with, you know, being quarantined back wherever he lives as he, you know, dealt with having COVID-19. You get here to Orlando, you have to quarantine in your room for a certain amount of time. So he's just getting back out onto the floor with his guys. That's going to take some time. But look at Russell Westbrook. I mean, does he look like a guy who's ever out of shape? No. So I think that the Rockets are confident that when it comes time to play meaningful games, that Russ will be in good shape and ready to go.
So he is back. Another team waiting for their star to come back is New Orleans to try and get into that fray for the eighth spot in the West. Zion Williamson still out, being tested every day. And I know New Orleans very tight-lipped about this, Lisa. So I'm not sure if there's any more information out there about the possibility of when he may be coming back.
There really isn't. I saw Alvin Gentry yesterday after their practice, and I just kind of said the same thing. When are you going to get your guy back? And he's, you know, don't know. This is a personal matter. He'll be back when he gets back. But like Alvin has said before, the Pelicans are used to playing without Zion. They mm-hmm. did it for most of the season. But this is a little bit different. Like, they had just started to get on a run. They were definitely, you know, had their eyes set on the playoffs. That's still very much within their grasp. But I no doubt that they want to have their guy back out here as quickly as possible, because they want him to be in tip-top shape. They want him to be in the right frame of mind, you know, mentally and physically. But I think they expect to have him back, and I think they expect to have him back and ready to play when the regular season restarts.
Lisa Salter's with us here. Lisa, I got to ask, too, we talked to Mark Spears last week. Is it true you just waxed him playing Madden?
Oh, absolutely, guys. I'm surprised. I was proud of him for putting that out there, because I wouldn't have put him on blast like that. But it was so much fun. I mean, we were just like little kids, just, you know, looking for anything to do. And then when we realized, okay, you brought your PlayStation, I brought mine too. Like, let's play. It took us over an hour to try to figure out how to do it and how to get connected online. But it was worth it. I just totally waxed him. I mean, and he blamed it on Drew Brees. And I'm like, Drew Brees, come on. Like, the guys were just talking. Drew Brees is one of the great quarterbacks of all time. But Patrick Mahomes, oh, he let him have it. So, but it was a lot of fun. I am not rushing to play him again, because I'm a very poor loser. So if I were to lose, I'd be just so mad that, you know, so I'm just going to go with this one victory, and I'm just going to ride this out through the rest of the bubble.
Oh, okay. Because he said he was going for a rematch. So if he does, are you going to, you're going to duck the rematch?
Well, I guess if he comes at me and he calls me out publicly, then I'm going to have to play him again. But, you know, right now I'm not the one who's like saying, hey, let's play again.
True. Good point. It's not on you. The ball is not in your court. You're exactly right.
Exactly. Well, Lisa, if push comes to shove, we have all the confidence in the world that you and Patrick Mahomes are going to go back out there and do the damn thing yet again. We appreciate the time this morning, Lisa. Stay
safe. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Lisa.
Oh, I can say, listen, Lisa Salters gave Mark Spears a fresh look on the field, and a fresh look is brought to you by Sport Clips. It's a new season at Sport Clips Haircuts. All stylists are clean, certified, and guy smart. Absolutely dealing with him out there. I did enjoy the way Mark raised it to us. Drew Brees threw five interceptions for
Seriously,
me.
Who's holding the control, buddy. My friend?
Yeah. But she's right, though. No need to get mad inside there. Maybe spike and break the controller, because then you're up bleeps creek on
That's very
one,
true.
And nobody wants that. Much more from inside the NBA bubble, including two teams trying to do the Texas two-step right into the playoffs. We'll get to that after this.
Golic and Wingo, and shout out to Junior. What up, boy?
It's Golic and Wingo.
Golic and Wingo brought to you by Nature Valley. Whether you're taking in your favorite lookout or lawn chair, sitting on your porch or in the park, Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time. Enjoy a creamy, crunchy, sweet and salty bar wherever you are. Golic and Wingo, we're now on ESPN News. Over on ESPN2, we got the Bassmaster Elite Series working on right now in Clayton, New York. Tommy Sanders and my buddy Mark Zona are on the call there. Keep an eye out for the Canadian Chris Johnston up with the early there, catching some good size bass up there in Clayton, New York. And he's the name to keep an eye on for this one, I believe.
There we go. Hot Bassmaster tips this morning here on Golic and Wingo. We've got that going on. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We got a new Taylor Swift album dropping at midnight tonight. Folklore, a 16-track venture from Taylor Swift. Surprise announcement this morning. Good Lord.
Let me know how that is tomorrow morning, because there's no way in God's green earth I'll be up for that one.
It's going to be perfect. I'm going to roll right off of Major League Baseball's opening opening day tonight. Get the nightcap of Dodgers and Dodgers Giants in that one, right into Taylor Swift's new album. It's going to be great. And from there, we can roll into the bubble. We've been giving you guys the kind of Spark Notes version of basketball's teams coming back to the NBA bubble right now. A little bit of a primer, since it's been a while since we've seen them on the court. Who's healthy? How are they positioned going into these eight games? They're going to be essentially a play-in for what is the expanded playoffs for this one now. And so looking forward to this one. We got two coming up for you here. Let's start it off with Chuck Cooperstein and the Dallas Mavericks.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Dallas Mavericks.
This is Chuck Cooperstein, the radio voice of the Mavericks. The Mavericks resumed the NBA season, seventh in the West with 40-27. They're a game and a half back of both Oklahoma City and Houston. And with their opening game of the restart coming against the Rockets, it's a huge game for them in their attempt to move out of seventh place to avoid a likely first-round meeting with the Clippers. As for comings and goings, the Mavericks won't have Dwight Powell, Jalen Brunson, and Courtney Lee, who are all hurt, and Willie Cauley-Stein, who opted out of the bubble and was replaced on the roster by Trey Burke. Turnaround's been led by Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. Support pieces like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Seth Curry have both had career years shooting the ball, thus helping the Mavericks offense to an NBA record 115.8 points per 100 possessions. Where the Mavericks will need to improve in order to make playoff noise isn't closing out games. They're just 6-16 in games decided by 5 points or fewer.
We talked about a number of teams, how solid they were from either injury or guys opting out. Dallas, you just heard the injuries and players opting out of where they are, because right now, basically 4 through 7, Utah, Oklahoma City, Houston, and Dallas are separated by 2.5 games. So there's certainly going to be some shifting going on there in the seeding, forgetting home and away, just on the seeding of who you would play in the first round. It's a team that was 40-27 before, you know, the season stopped, with obviously the potential there. But you just heard some of the names that are out, some of the depth that is out for this team going forward.
Yep, going to be a tough one there. The Dallas is all centered on the Luka Doncic show going forward anyway. Looked at him and said, I knew you were trouble when you walked in, and he has done nothing but deliver. Already passed Jason Kidd for the most triple-doubles in Mavs franchise history. So we've got that sure thing and that young commodity, at least, to keep an eye on with the Mavs and all this, despite a lot of the injury woes and all of that. Let's check in on a very different situation with the San Antonio Spurs and Jason Mannix.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. San Antonio Spurs.
I'm Jason Mannix with ESPN San Antonio, and for the Spurs, their NBA record-tying 22-year playoff streak will come to an end in the NBA bubble in Orlando. Before the shutdown, the Spurs were playing some of their best basketball of the season, but that isn't saying much considering how inconsistent they played throughout the year. The 8 games in the NBA bubble is like a middling bowl game for a 6 or 7 win college football team, using the extra practice time as a springboard for next year. Coach Greg Popovich says it's all about getting minutes for the young Spurs.
For us, in our specific situation, development is more important than anything.
Now, the Spurs will be without one of their best players in LaMarcus Aldridge, who had shoulder surgery during the hiatus. Veterans DeMar DeRozan, Patty Mills, and Rudy Gay will keep the Spurs competitive, but look for guys like DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, and Keldon Johnson to get a lot of run. While you never want to count out a pop-led team, it will be 8 games and done for the San Antonio Spurs.
And it will, without a doubt. They're sitting 4 games behind Memphis in the 8th slot with 3 other teams in front of them vying for that 8-9, maybe playing. So they're going to be done. And when he made reference to the Midland College team playing in that bowl game, the reference there is you take that bowl game because you get 15 practices. So you get to work on a lot of the young players. You get 15 practices sometime in December before that bowl game happens. And that's exactly what Greg Popovich is going to use this time for. As he said, young guys getting minutes and able to play a little more basketball before the season ends, before they have an eight game little swing here to work on.
And it's a good reminder that everyone comes into this with different goals relative to where they are and all that. The Spurs, it's so strange to be talking about them in this regard, just because we had been so used to who this franchise was, generally tending to navigate well from one superstar to another throughout their history. In all of this one, Popovich at the helm gives you good confidence that they'll continue to develop these guys, but heading into their version of the bubble right now, 0-8, man. Why you gotta be so mean?
I mean, listen, it was with LaMarcus Aldridge, there was even very little hope, and then he's out with the shoulder surgery. So it's, we all know what they're down there for and what they're trying to accomplish.
I'm not gonna make the joke that you all expect me to make about DeMar DeRozan and all this. I'm not gonna do it. Because sure, I'm not cruel, because I've changed, all right? It's been a cruel summer as is. I don't need to add to that fire on this one. So that is another one we will continue to update you throughout the week and the coming weeks on all the teams heading to the NBA bubble. But one MLB team is going all in and making one very large bet. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.